Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Dosser. I got a fun show on the way for you today. I was able to catch up with my buddy from Barstool Sports. You know him as Reeves. And we went through all of the conference tournaments that are launching this week, talking to you about what you need to know on the bubble, what you need to know to bet these favorites, who's going to end up winning them, and who you want to stay away from. One thing I just want to note before we dive into it, there was no Monday Overreactions podcast this week. As many of you probably know, I welcomed my second child into the world on Friday, and childbirth takes precedence to overreacting on podcasts. Before we get into this conversation with Reeks, I got to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast in any app that you listen to podcasts in. Any interaction that you have with this episode, whether it's rating or reviewing or download or subscribing or whatever it ends up being, it all helps. It makes my bosses happy. And when my bosses are happy, I'm happy. When I'm happy, you are getting a better podcast. So in reality, giving me 5 stars and saying something nice about me is only going to make your day better. So I thank you for any help that you can give us. And now let's dive into that conversation with Reed. And now let me welcome on good friend of the podcast, Reeves from Barstool Sports. You know him as our resident gambling expert. We did not have a great Saturday the last time that we guys talked, but I did personally. As you guys know, I do now have another child in the world. So if you hear any yelling or any crying in the background, do not be alarmed. That is just what five-day-old children tend to do. So Reeves, what's going on, my man? Hopefully you are less sleep-deprived than I am.
I'm sleep deprived mostly because it's March and I've been battling a 3-week foot injury. So I've just been up like in pain in a completely different sense than you are up with 2 kids now.
How did you hurt your foot? I have to ask.
Legit no idea. It's the weirdest injury. So the day after the concert, I took a weird step when I was walking to the concert, kind of stepped in like a grate, like on the street, like a crack in the street. And I thought it was just a bruise, wasn't healed. And so I went to a podiatrist. They said it's like chilblain, which is like a frostbite type injury. I don't go outside.
So you have frostbite on your foot?
Pretty much. And I have not been able to walk on my right foot for 3 weeks.
That is very, very weird. It's very old injury. Man of you.
It's the oldest injury I could possibly suffer.
Yes, without a doubt. Not even close.
Great time to suffer it, though.
Yeah, you're right. That reminds me of have you seen all those commercials about how like this is the most popular time in America for vasectomies?
Yep. Because everyone just wants like next Tuesday or something like that is the most common date for it or something.
Yeah, a buddy of mine actually did like a full documentary on how March Madness is like the most profitable time for people that are looking to or people that do the vasectomies themselves. So
when you were growing up, were you a skip school for NCAA tournaments?
Yeah.
Of course.
It depended on when UConn played. Because my dad always made sure that we watched the UConn game whenever they were playing growing up. But once I got to high school and college, I never went to class. And I would out of work. And it's probably been like 20 straight years that I've been in front of the TV at noon or 12:20 or whenever that first tip is on Thursday until whenever that last tip ends on Sunday night without a break in between.
I do kind of miss the thrill of like not going to school or work for the NCAA tournament since this is my first full-time year covering college basketball.
So you miss the fact... Why? Because now it's like just your job and now you have to work while you're watching it?
Yeah, right. Like it was one where it was in years past, like it was a holiday because you took off work, you skipped school, whatever it was, to just go hang out with friends, whatever, watch the games and relax. Now it's like, well, I'm just doing what I always do. I just work during it now.
Well, I guess how I can see that. I think it's kind of stupid because now you get paid to sit there and watch basketball all day smarmy tweets about it. And think about how much you're going to bet on these games.
I'm scared for that.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of which, part of the reason I have you on here is I want you to help me break down the 7 big tournaments of the day and talk a little bit about some of the bid thieves
that we have coming up. But before I do that, I'm gonna kind of get your take on this because it seems like it's been a little bit of a polarizing topic. Where do you stand on the idea of mid-majors like Belmont and mid-majors like Lipscomb and mid-majors like UNCG that are not going to be automatic bids because they've already lost in their conference tournament, but people like me and have been pushing for to get that kind of at-large spot over somebody like a Clemson or somebody like an Alabama or Texas or Florida or whoever the hell it ends up being? Where do you stand on that?
I go back and forth, right? Like, I'm completely cool with more mid-majors getting in, but I think we have to look at it by a case-by-case basis. Like, I hate when people just say, well, we need more mid-majors. And it's like, okay, but why? Like, you can't say that UNC Greensboro would love to have Indiana's schedule when I think me and you talked about this before, and I think you're the one that said it, where Indiana would love to play UNC Greensboro's automatic qualifying bid schedule, right? Like, it goes back and forth for me, where I agree that, like, I don't think Clemson should be in. As of right now, Clemson should not be in. But I also don't think UNC Greensboro should be on. Out of, like, the mid-majors, UNC Greensboro is, like, the fourth on the list for me. You know, I'd be willing to listen to Belmont and that argument, but I think we just have to kind of look at it for what it is. And you know, I don't like that. Yes, okay, UNC Greensboro played two Power Six schools in the non-conference. They played Kentucky tough, played LSU tough, lost both of them. But it's tough because they don't have the same schedule, but at the same time, they didn't do what they needed to. And it's what we asked for the high majors, too. Do what you need to. So it's one of those. I hate this. I love and hate this time of the year where, and this is especially true this year with UNC Greensboro leading Wofford for, what, 28, 30 minutes yesterday, if not more. And now everyone's going, well, they played a tournament team in the SoCon final. Let's put UNC Greensboro in. It's like, well, why? Just because they played somebody tough? I mean, you know, name another close team that Wofford played in the SoCon that's not going into the tournament. Should they get in too?
I think that there's an argument to be made for UNC Greensboro along the same lines as the argument that should be made for Clemson, right? The whole thing that these guys have done is that they haven't put together the quality wins that you need to put together to
and
be able to
avoid the bad losses.
Yes, they've avoided the bad losses. The worst loss that UNC Greensboro has this season is at Furman, right?
Right. And Furman, that's not a bad loss.
It's not. Furman is 41st in the net. That's a top 50 loss. It's a quad one loss, right? And they also beat Furman on a neutral court. They beat Furman at home, and they won at Tennessee State. They have, as it stands today, two quadrant one wins. Do you know how many quadrant one wins Clemson has this very moment right now?
Right.
They have one. They also
have fine saying UNC Greensboro should be ahead of Clemson.
Yeah,
but it's you know when you get to like Indiana and Texas, even I mean Texas has better wins than UNC Greensboro has.
I definitely would agree with that. And the thing
but I'm saying, like, it's obviously Texas is a weird scenario because I think them and Indiana are the two most polarizing schools possibly on the bubble from the majors. But like, let's say TCU, I'd be fine with UNC Greensboro over TCU.
I think I would as well. And you know, I'm going to ride for Belmont until
Belmont I agree
gets with in. I think Belmont that there's a very It's going to be very difficult for you to convince me that Belmont shouldn't be in the tournament, given the fact that they won at Murray State. They swept Lipscomb. Both of those are top 50 teams in the net. They won at UCLA, which, you know, it's not their fault that UCLA fell off of a cliff this season.
Yep.
And they have five quadrant one and quadrant two wins and a 5-3 record in those games. I think that they probably have a resume that deserves to get in. And while I ride for these mid-major teams, I say that knowing that UNC Greensboro and Lipscomb and teams like that don't necessarily have what it's going to take to get you into the tournament. The reason I want them in and the reason I would rather see them get in than somebody like a Clemson or somebody like a – well, Clemson is different because I have a whole separate rant about Clemson. The reason I'd rather see them get in than someone like, Alabama or Texas or – let me just kind of – I'm going to bring up our bracketology right now. And our last four in right now, Ohio State, Creighton, Clemson, and NC State. Like those teams just – they're not interesting. They're not exciting. There's nothing about them
I agree with that
makes me want to go and watch that game and watch when they play.
I disagree. I don't agree about that with Creighton. I think Creighton's exciting.
Well, fair enough, but it's still like it's just Creighton.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's not like Doug McDermott is there. And my thing is, the reason that the NCAA tournament is what it is, I mean, in addition to like all the gambling and the fact that there's basketball on all day and just everything about what makes the sport great, you know, buzzer beaters and everything, four games going on at a time, the way that you can kind of get out of work, national holiday, all that stuff. Part of why that has become such a thing is because you get these mid-majors and you get these Cinderellas and you get these Florida Gulf Coasts and you get George Mason making it to a Final Four and you get VCU going from the first four when they were an at-large team that people said shouldn't get in out of the CAA to the Final Four. George Mason was an at-large team coming out of the CAA that people said probably shouldn't get in, right? Wichita State back in the day. And I know that the landscape has kind of changed as, you know, the Butlers aren't mid-majors anymore. And Wichita State and Creighton and all of these teams, VCU, all of these teams that used to be the best mid-majors are no longer mid-majors, right, which is part of the reason why this argument gets a little tougher year in and year out. But those stories are what makes this sport and this event great. And I would much rather have a team like a Belmont, who, by the way, has an NBA player on it in Dylan Windler. I would much rather see them get their chance to go out there and make a run than to watch Clemson play again or watch Alabama play again or whoever it ends up, or Ohio State. Like, I have no interest in seeing those teams. And frankly, I don't think, let me put it, I think this is the other way to phrase it. I think that rather than just saying, okay, we're going to put in these the best teams just because they happen to be better and play in a better conference, I'd rather see teams that play from a smaller conference and have done enough during the regular season to deserve it than to see some of these power conference teams that go, you know, 7-11 in their league get a bid just because they happen to be a member of the Big Ten. Like, I get that they're better. I'm not arguing. Like, I'm not going to sit here and make the argument that Belmont is a better or more talented basketball team than somebody like Texas. I think that that is a dumb thing to say. I think that Jackson Hayes might go for 25-20 if Belmont played against Texas right now. That's not the point. The point is that Belmont went out and they're 25-5 on the season or whatever it is. Texas is 16-15. And I would rather reward teams at a lower level and hope that they end up being the team that is the next, you know, miracle run to the next Loyola Chicago. I would rather see that kind of give a team a chance to do that than let Clemson go in or Arizona State go in or whoever go in and play a playing game that they obviously do not care about and then send them packing to go on home.
I'll say here's what I'd prefer to see, because I agree with what you said, but at the same time you can say, well, look what Syracuse did from the first four last year getting to the Sweet 16. Give me a high major versus low major. The two playing games should be one high major, one mid major.
I think that all four of the playing games should be that. I don't think that a 16 seed should have to play in for the right to get in. So I'm with
right,
you there.
I'm working under the setup that we currently have. I agree that it's dumb for 16 seeds to play a playing game because you won your automatic qualifier. You should just be a 15 or 16 seed. But the way it's set up now, until that gets changes, give me two high majors, you know, give me a Texas versus Belmont and give me a Creighton versus Lipscomb.
All right. So I mentioned that Clemson is a little bit of a different deal, and I want to explain what I meant by that. Clemson is, look, I love metrics, right? I love KenPom. I love the net. Like, I think that those are such useful tools when it comes to trying to figure out like who the best teams in college basketball are. And Clemson ranks well in both of them. As of today, they are 28th in KenPom, and they are 35th in the net. And I think that those metrics tell you just how good that basketball team is. Now, the problem is, the reason that those metrics are where they are is because of how many close losses Clemson has. They lost by 2 against North Carolina at home. They lost by 1 at Louisville, who was 24th in the net. They lost by 2 at NC State, who was 35th in the net. They lost by 2 at home to Nebraska, who's a top 50 team in the net. They lost by 1 at Miami, who's 94th. That's a quadrant 2 game. They have those 5 losses are by a total of 8 points. And that doesn't factor in a 5-point loss to Creighton, an 8-point loss at Syracuse, or a 9-point loss at Florida State. They are
or
good.
Mississippi.
Or Mississippi State. They are a good basketball team. and they should count as much when we are talking about these teams in terms of like, is Clemson a quality win? Yes, they are. They are an objectively good basketball team. Now, the problem with that is I don't think that metrics should be the be-all and end-all when it comes to seeding these teams and to ranking these teams and to determining who gets into the tournament, because I do not want to live in a world where the 2 points that are the 2 point difference, the whole idea of like efficiency is that you don't want to put everything to determining who are good teams. You don't want to put in everything into the difference between a 1 point loss and a 1 point win, right? Because if everything you're doing is just based off of results, the 1 point loss and the 1 point win are drastically different. Win in the end, like, it basically means like you're the same thing. It just so happens to be a shot goes in at the end. So it should tell you how good the teams are. Now, I want that shot to matter, though. And this is a key point and something I hope my sleep-deprived mind is making clear. You want that moment where that game-winning shot is in the air, where somebody releases the ball and the buzzer sounds, and you're waiting to find out who wins or loses based on whether or not that ball goes in the basket. The only way that that matters is if there is a difference in what happens in a win versus a loss. You want that shot to matter. It is what makes this sport great. It's what makes basketball great and what makes competing great, the difference between a win and a loss. And results in that situation, they have to matter in terms of whether or not you're going to get into the tournament. And Clemson, with all those close losses and one quadrant one win, that's not enough for me to determine that they are going to get in the tournament. You need those wins and losses to matter. And I think, at least just the way that I feel, is that should cost Clemson. The way that it should work is that these metrics should tell you who are the quality wins, who are the quality losses, just how good is a basketball team. But actually going out and getting those wins and proving that you can get it done is something that needs to matter and needs to be taken into account. And I think that it should happen with this Clemson team. And frankly, I think unless they can make a run in the ACC, I think that it is something that it should cost them. And give me all the Belmont, all the Lipscomb, all the UNC Greensboro over that Clemson team. And I'm sorry if that's the way that, if that makes you mad, if that trolls you, if you're Brian Snow, I'm sorry, but that's just, it's the way that it's got to be.
Yeah, like for me, I just want to me, you have to go, essentially what we did, we worked it out, like going kind of team by team. Like, you can't lump in these teams versus these teams. Like, that's the incorrect way to do it. It's, you know, come up with your list of, you know, rank your teams and go through the way like you're a committee member. Okay, how would I take this team versus this team? And that's why I think the fair way to do it, as opposed to, well, we need more mid-majors or we need less mid-majors, because I hate blanket statements like that, because it's not fair or true either way. And for me, like, I'm indifferent. Like, I would love more mid-majors, but I also, like, there's going to be storylines regardless. Whether we had more mid-majors in last year wasn't going to stop the Loyola storyline or the Villanova storyline. So for me, like, that's the important thing, because we're always still going to get that. I just, selfishly, I want to be entertained. And my entertainment relies on close games, probably. So just give me who you think are, the most entertaining teams, and B, give me the best games. And I think, again, you just have to go through kind of like what we did of, I agree with what you said about Clemson, and I agree that I would take Lipscomb and Belmont over them. I don't know if I would take UNC Greensboro over them, but that's where you can start the debate. And it's not, well, give me all these teams over this team just because of, or over this group of high majors just because so. So I think that's the key, is not to get suckered into the blanket statement or grouping things like, well, we need, you know, I demand more mid-majors, just because I think that you lose your argument in that case.
All right, so since we just talked a little bit about the bubble, I do want to talk about some of the potential bid thieves, because what I'm hoping is that the number of at-larges available is going to get thin, because let's say someone like a Fresno State wins the Mountain West Conference Tournament, and someone like a Memphis wins the American Athletic Conference Tournament playing at home. So who are your – and I guess we can kind of tie this a little bit into the preview of – some of these tournaments, but who are your favorite potential bid thieves, and who are the guys that you think can go out there and save us from getting an NC State team into the NCAA tournament?
Man, that's going to be tough, because I don't, maybe in the MAC you look at like a Toledo. Toledo might be able to steal a bid, because Buffalo is going to be an at-large.
They might. I mean, that's definitely one of the teams that I have on my list of who you need to keep an eye on when it comes to getting into the tournament if you're one of these bubble teams.
Yeah, the A-10, I would think Davidson has a chance. Maybe Dayton, one of those two teams, to beat VCU, because VCU is going to be an at-large. Mountain West, I mean, you're cheering for Utah State probably, right?
I think Utah State's going to get in. I think
so too, but you just take doubt out of the equation.
Yeah, but I think that they're going to get in regardless. The team that I think you need to root for is San Diego State, because then you can get Utah State to the title game, or hope that Utah State ends up losing to like Fresno State in the semifinals, because then that would only be a quadrant two loss, especially if Fresno State goes out and beats Nevada. I don't think that would be a bad loss. It could really hurt them that much.
That's kind of it when you look at like bid stealers.
I disagree.
You think there's more?
I think that certainly Memphis is one that I think you need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, Memphis, Temple, depending what you think of them as a lock already or not.
See, my take on Temple is that they're on the bubble. So if they get to if they make a run to the the semifinals or whatever, like they're probably already in the tournament before That's they fine. End up playing in that title game.
Memphis. I mean,
Wichita State is another one for me. They've kind of been hot of late, and
Wichita.
Greg Marshall is figuring things out. But I really think Memphis is the sneaky one. They're playing at home. In that event.
They're at home. They have a guy in Jeremiah Martin that can just win you a game.
Yeah, win you like five games.
That's what I mean. But like, he's the one that like you have a chance to win a game because he's on your team.
Yeah, you know, we can get into some of these other ones in the power conferences in a minute. Go ahead.
DePaul in the Big East or Providence.
Well, we're gonna get into both of those teams when we get into the Big East preview.
I don't think there's gonna be a bid steal. Like, I don't think there's really a chance for a bid stealer in the SEC or the Big 12. The ACC, no. So you're kind of, and that's not, I mean, that's typically the case that you knock out a couple conferences right there that it kind of limits where the bid stealers are going to come from.
Greensboro was probably our best chance.
Greensboro or Furman, you needed one of those two teams. WCC, you needed Gonzaga to somehow lose in the semis.
Yeah, St. Mary's, they're playing, probably by the time that people are listening to this, St. Mary's will be playing Gonzaga. So if St. Mary's ends up winning that game, I think we talked about this earlier, a little bit of bid collusion there if Gonzaga throws that game. I cannot see Gonzaga losing. They haven't lost to a WCC team by single digits all season long. You think they're going to start now in the title game of their conference tournament against their rival? I just don't see it.
But yeah, I think the MAC might be the MAC and the American are probably the two best chances for a bid stealing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with VCU.
A-10, yeah, that's true.
The way that they've been playing of late, I can't see it. Although that said, you know, Davidson's going to be good. That's in Barclays.
That in Brooklyn? Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, VCU will pack that. They played there earlier this year too.
VCU packs everywhere they go.
That's what I'm saying. Like I was just thinking where it would be. Like if it's because the A-10, if they were in D.C., you might get a chance for, like, Davidson to kind of pack that, too.
No, there would be even more VC.
VCU, yeah, that's VCU, true.
Yeah, there'd be more.
I'm trying to think of where is the A-10 even played? It's typically, like, Atlantic City, Brooklyn, or D.C., right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah, that's VCU everywhere.
All right, so let's dive into some of these tournament previews. I want to start with the ACC, and I think that we need to talk about this with the assumption that Zion Williamson is going to play, because I think that Coach K came out and said that he basically expects him to play, which more or less confirms that Zion Williamson that he is going to play, and at least the way that I kind of read the situation, he was being held out until the postseason.
Well, if you saw his reaction after Carolina, I'd be hard-pressed to think he's – did you see him, like, storm off after that game?
Was he really mad? He looked like he was mad. Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame him, man. Competitive dude.
It looked like I'm ready to get out on the court type walk. Like putting
mad that he was held out.
Pretty much.
Yeah. All right. So talk to me about the ACC. Who do you think is the favorite heading in?
It's got
to
be Virginia, right? Because you have – if seeds hold, you have Duke, Carolina. You decide who you want out of that game. I'm staying away from taking one of those two teams. I like Virginia. I'm not going to overthink it. My whole thing this March has just been keep it simple and trust what you know. And I know Virginia's the best team in the conference right now.
Yeah, that's probably fair. The important point that you made is that they are on the opposite side of the bracket from Duke and North Carolina. So they have to beat, assuming seeds hold, they have to beat Florida State to get to the
NC title State, game. Florida State would be their path.
Yeah. Whereas Duke is going to have to beat Syracuse and then beat North Carolina. So that's the difference. Although I will say, I do think that Duke is still the best team in that conference. And I will go to my grave saying this, Reeves, and I don't care what anybody tells me. Duke is the best team in college basketball when they are at 100%. And
I agree 100%, I should say. That's why I prefaced it with Virginia's the best team in the conference right now. Just because Zion's official, like, there has been a statement yet about Zion officially.
Yeah, so the odds that we are using to talk about some of this stuff are going to come from DraftKings Sportsbook. That's the one that we can officially discuss. Riggs, I know that you sometimes have different odds than I do. So the way that it currently stands is Virginia is getting plus 150, which for people that don't know, that means 1.5 to 1. It basically means if you bet $10, you are going to get $25 back or win $15. Duke is plus 175. I would probably stay away from both Duke and North Carolina if I was betting on this, just because they got to play each other. And I don't want to bet on somebody to have to beat two of the top five teams in the country in order to get paid out, which is why I think that Virginia is the best value of those three. I don't think I would bet on any of them to win, however, just because you're not getting enough money back for the bet that you're trying to make and the run that they're going to have to go on. So talk to me a little bit about sleepers that you see in this league.
I kind of like Florida State as a sleeper. I guess if you can call them as a sleeper, as a four seed, because I think everyone's forgotten about Florida State and all they've done is just go win games. I know they come at home, but they have a bunch of length. They can really bother people. You know, they can kind of get out in tempo. They're not a great shooting team. I understand that. But that defense is so good. And they've had one loss since the middle of January. That was at Carolina when Carolina kind of blitzed them in the second half, late first half, second half. I think that they are an intriguing team. In terms of sleeper, I mean,
I do agree with you a little bit on Florida State. The problem I have with that is
I like their matchup against Virginia Tech, and then it comes down to having to shoot against Virginia.
Yeah, I don't. That's the thing. I don't trust them against Virginia. And that's because what Florida State kind of does is, like, they're one of these teams that wants to get out and run a little bit, and they want to force some turnovers, and they want to get to the offensive glass, and they're kind of built on their ability to slash and the fact that they have some big athletic dudes, and they're switchable, and that's the way that they want to play, and that is not how you can play to beat Virginia unless you have guys like Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett, who are just absolute monsters. And as much as I like Terrence Mann, as good as I think that Fiondu Cabangele is and is going to be, I just cannot find myself and justify picking Florida State to beat Virginia. Keep in mind, when they played earlier this year, the final score was 65-52, but that was because Florida State went on a 16-0 run in the final 2 minutes when Virginia put in the scrubs. The score was 65-36 with 2 minutes left in that game.
The other reason I threw them out is I'm scared, similar to what we said about Carolina Duke, I'm scared to take someone from that half of the bracket, right? Like I want to say Louisville. Because I think that they are – I think Chris Mack's a good tournament-setting coach, and I kind of like their matchup against Carolina, and we saw them up 23 against Duke before.
I would agree with you 100% if Chris Mack could pass a rule where basketball games ended with five minutes left in the game.
Right.
If you do that, then I will bet all of my money on Louisville to win.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
But, like, you know, I don't trust Syracuse's offense, especially that they'd have to play Duke in the first round. I don't trust that bottom half of the bracket. I don't trust Virginia Tech without Justin Robinson in this setting. I don't trust NC State or Clemson to beat Virginia. So it's weird because it's set up so well for Virginia this year.
Yep. And for people that don't know, they have, in addition to winning for the last six ACC regular season titles. They are the reigning ACC tournament champions, and they won in 2014 as well. So as crazy as this may sound, they have won six of the last 11 possible ACC titles, whether it's regular season or conference, and they might end up getting it done again this year. Is there anything else that you think we need to talk about here? I do think it's interesting that there are as many bubble teams in the ACC as there are. Syracuse is mostly
comfortably done.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call them necessarily comfortably in, but I do think that they are in a position where it would take something really freaky for them to get knocked out with a first round loss.
It would probably have to what? They'd have to lose to Pitt, and then
they have to lose to Pitt, like random stuff happening with.
I would say you'd have to have like five bids stolen or something like that.
Yeah, there's probably six teams. They're going to be one of like the last four buys, if not.
I would say for them, it's more the fear of dropping into Dayton again.
Yeah, something like that.
Louisville, I think, is safe of Dayton, even if they lose to Notre Dame or Georgia Tech.
Yeah, and the bids, the bubble teams that are in the conference right now are Clemson and NC State.
And they play each other.
They play each other. And hopefully, if the NCAA tournament gods are looking down on us, that will be a play-out game, and the loser will not get into the tournament. Although I do think what's probably going to end up happening is both of them make their way to Dayton for the first four, because the selection committee hates basketball teams that don't play in one of the Power Five leagues.
Over, all right, over under bet, 2.5 ACC number one seeds.
I would probably, I'm gonna take the under just because that's the smart bet. But there is a situation where it could end up being the over, and what would have to happen, at least in my mind,
I think it would have to be a miracle.
I think it would have to be. I don't know.
It'd have to be a miracle. You would need Tennessee and Kentucky to both lose, preferably in the quarters, if not one in the semis, one in the quarters. You would need Texas Tech to lose, not win the Big 12. You would need Michigan State to lose early. You would need Michigan not to win the Michigan, or probably Purdue not to win the Big 10, or yeah. Michigan State.
And Kentucky and Tennessee play each other or are on track.
You would need one to lose in the quarters, one to lose in the semis.
Yep. I don't think that it's very hard to do. So I would take the under. But I do think the best chance for that to happen would be for Duke to beat North Carolina and then win the ACC tournament by beating Virginia, because that makes North Carolina's two wins over Duke look that much better. And
3-0 versus Virginia.
And Duke would be 3-0 against Virginia, and with only one loss to their name at full strength. So that's the way that would have to happen. I would not bet on that being the thing that actually does happen, though. Although I do think – well, let me rephrase that. I would not be surprised to see that actually happen. In terms of the way that played out, I would not bet on it being three teams from the ACC being number one seeds. Let's move on. I want to go to the Big 12 next because you just talked about them.
It's going to be an interesting one.
I think it's going to be very interesting. Tell me who you think.
I think the Big 12 has been really interesting the last few years. Like it's one of the, I think, one of the more forgotten about Conference Hornets, because everyone like reminisces about the ACC and Big East and the Big 10, you know, kind of with MSG last year. And I think people kind of forget about the Big 12.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Give me your take on who you think the favorite should be as it stands.
Texas Tech.
Without hesitation.
Yeah. Texas Tech.
They are plus 175.
They're the best team in the conference.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's close. Even with Dean Wade hurt, Dean Wade's questionable for this. If it was healthy, I'd still comfortably say Texas Tech's the best team in the conference.
Yeah, and it's not just that they want to share the conference title. They're the hottest team in the conference. I believe it is now. They've won 12 out of 13 and 10 in a row. And I don't think that they've actually missed the three-pointer during that run, although I could be wrong. I'm going to have to go back and check the tape. But I'm pretty sure that they have not missed the three-pointer
were banking in on senior night threes.
Yeah, they've their defense is unbelievable, and they have an absolute superstar in Jarrett Culver. And oh, by the way, I don't know if you're watching it, but we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon as Notre Dame is playing Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech has just erased what was once a 20-something point lead down to three with a minute left, and they just went on an 8-0 run in the last 2 minutes. So if you turn that off, Riggs, put it back on, and we can get some live reactions.
I have it on because I'm sweating out a Notre Dame pick in my pool.
Well, you might not get it, dude. It's 3 points with a minute left.
That's the way I've been lately, though. So what's new?
All right. So obviously Texas Tech is a favorite. There's really not all that much to discuss there. Who do you think is the sleeper in that conference?
Iowa State.
Yes.
Because they are Iowa State. that's my expert analysis. Iowa State because they are Iowa State.
Yes. So, oh, man. I can't shake them, man.
I love my Cyclones. Monty Morris is one of my favorite college basketball players of all time. And I think because of that, I just have this love affair for Iowa State.
I just love the way that this team is put together in terms
they're
of...
They're put together perfectly.
Yes. The problem
Except
is...
they mesh. They don't mesh well.
Yeah, the problem is that the as good as the skill sets are and as talented as all of these people are... I don't think it's that the skill sets don't match. I just don't know if they actually like each other.
That's what I'm saying. No, it's a personality thing.
Yes, it's definitely a personality. Like we had the fight in practice last week, and
the fight on the court. Not fight. The discussion on the court.
Mariel Shayak may or may not have kicked a door. So who actually knows what's going on? But I will say this: that
They get a banged up Baylor team and a banged up Kansas State team.
To get to the finals where they would have to play, Texas Tech, who they beat Texas on Tech, the road, or Kansas, or who Kansas. They beat by 17 at home.
So, unless, a Texas could get there, possibly.
So I think that probably the best bet that you can make in this tournament is Iowa State plus 650, which is pretty good odds, knowing full well that there is probably, a 40% chance that they lose in the first round to Baylor, 50% chance they lose in the first round to Baylor.
Iowa State, so probably, 75%.
Yeah,
and we're both touting Iowa State, so it's probably, 90%.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think the best way to phrase it is this. Texas Tech, when they play their best basketball, no one in this conference is beating them. But the closest that anyone can get to a ceiling of Texas Tech, I think, is Iowa State.
Yes, just because Dean Wade's probably not going to play in this thing. They came out, and I think, did they list him doubtful officially?
There was a quote that said that Bruce Weber said he was doubtful. And, I mean, that makes sense, right? You're about to go into the NCAA tournament that actually matters. You got a guy with a foot problem where you're trying to limit his minutes, and then you're going to go ask him to play three games in 3 days? No, you don't do that. You let him sit, you let him rest, because the NCAA tournament is what people care about. And you have a real shot to get to an Elite Eight or a Final Four again.
Are we just being dumb and should we just say Kansas because it's in Kansas City and the Big 12 and that's all they do?
Well, that was the other thing that I was going to say. There are two other bets that I kind of like in this. One of them is Oklahoma State, which when I wrote my column, it was plus 10,000. It's now come down to plus 8,000.
That's crazy. It's the 9 seed in the Big 12 that you can get odds at, 8 to 1?
Yeah. No, 80 to 1.
Or 80 to 1. Sorry, I thought you said 8 to 1.
No, 80 to 1. They have 1-2 in a row. The two losses that they took before that were by 5 points to Kansas and by 4 points in overtime at Texas Tech. They have a bunch of guys on that team that can really, really, really shoot the ball. Lindy Waters and the guy whose last name has a D, a Z, a G, and a W, and I have no idea how to pronounce it. I'm not even going to pretend to try. And if they can get hot, I think that they can make a little bit of noise because they are on the side of the bracket.
For Boynton too, man.
They do.
Let's be honest. You see kids kind of give up on coaches when season's not going well and you get annoyed and everything like that. With everything that Boynton's kind of gone through or Oklahoma State has gone through the last 2 years, these kids, they will play their balls off for Boynton.
Yep. And the point that I was going to make was that they play Kansas State in the quarterfinals. If they get past, I can't remember who they're playing in the first round.
They have TCU in the first round.
So if they get past TCU, they get Kansas State, who's banged up, and then they play either Iowa State or Baylor in the semifinals. So they miss Texas Tech and those Kansas Jayhawks that you just mentioned. And I do want to talk about them because as much trouble as they've had this season, all 8 of their losses have come on the road. They are undefeated at home. And if there's anything that you know about the Sprint Center, it's that it might as well be Fog Allen Field House. So it's going to be packed with Kansas fans. You can get them at plus 350 still. I do think that...
I'd like a little bit better odds on them.
I would too. I mean, I would like a little bit of better odds on everybody, but...
Right. But I'm saying if you can get them at 5-1, I think it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I said that you have to hammer if it gets to plus 450. So we're kind of on the same page there. But I do think that's something to watch, and I don't want to bet on this Kansas team, but I never want to bet against a Bill Self team playing in a building that is anywhere near the state of Kansas.
Right, right. And like they're playing for seeding too. Like they could still end up with a protected seed here.
Yep, very much so.
And I think that's important. And I think Self knows that's important. I think Self knows how to address that with people.
And one other thing to note is that they, assuming everything holds, they would get Texas Tech in the semifinals. And it was just like a month ago that they beat Texas Tech by 16 points when they were up by 25 in the second half against the Red Raiders. So it's not a completely out of this world that they can get this thing done. But let's move on. Next one I want to talk about, the Big East, which makes absolutely zero sense.
It's the Big East is just so drunk. It's so perfect.
So I don't even know who you can call a favorite in this tournament because Villanova has lost four of their last six and five of their last eight, all away from home. Marquette has lost four in a row. I've never seen anything like this where one team tried to give away the Big East regular season title and then the other team gave it right back to them. It's just, it's absolutely mind-boggling to me the way that this played out. I don't trust a single team in this league to do anything at all. So, Riggs, I'm going to have to ask you this. What would the odds have to be for you to bet on Villanova and the odds have to be for you to bet on Marquette to end up winning the Big East title?
I mean, good Lord. For Villanova, you know what? It sounds about right because it's Villanova and this is all they do. Like 3.3-1. And Marquette, like 4-1.
Yep. And what you're getting right now is half of that for both of those teams.
Right. And I don't want any of that.
I don't want any of it at all. The one thing I will say is this. The way that the bracket kind of shakes out, it makes sense for Villanova to be able to get to the finals like fairly easily, right? Because they're going to get Butler or Providence in the quarterfinals. And then they get Creighton or Xavier in the semis. And I'm not like, look, I get it, but I'm not sold on either of those two teams.
But Providence and Butler always play Villanova tough. Like, that's the fear.
I mean, I get it, and it's also like Madison Square Garden, and this Villanova team just frankly is not all that good, so anything can happen. But I'm not sitting at the, like, this isn't Butler with Chris Holtman, and this isn't Providence with Chris Dunn.
No, and that's fair, but you get one of those two teams, like Providence kind of can take the air out of the ball a little bit, so you've got limited possessions in those games. If it's all it takes is a bad shooting night for Villanova. That's what's scary about them.
And all it takes is a bad shooting night for Marquette, too. Like that's the thing about both of those teams this season.
Marquette has more options than Villanova. Like Villanova, it's Pascal and Booth.
Yeah, and the other part of it that makes me want to take Villanova a little bit more is that Marquette just does not have a very good draw, I don't think. For starters,
well, if St. John's beats DePaul, they have to go up against a team that Marcus Howard is terrified of.
Yes, and that's the thing that makes St. John's such an interesting futures bet for me because they are plus 900. They have lost, what is it now? I think they've lost three in a row. They've lost five of their last six, and I think it's like seven of their last 10 heading into the tournament. But they finished below 500 in the Big East. They are the seventh seed, despite the fact that they have Shamori Pons, Mustafa Heron, LJ Figueroa, Justin Simon, and Marvin Clark, which is probably the most talented starting five in that conference. Is that a hot take?
Maybe. I mean, no. I mean, they're one of the top two. I mean, maybe Marquette's more talented, but they're one of the top two.
And here's the thing about them. They were swept by DePaul, who they play in the first round. They were swept by Providence. They were swept by Xavier. They do not show up in games that don't matter. But they were also 3-1 against Marquette and Villanova. They swept Marquette. They
blew a lead at Nova.
Yep, they blew a lead at Nova, and they probably should have swept Seton Hall if in that first game of the Big East season there wasn't like an awful call down the stretch. Like there was an out-of-bounds call where St. John's got a steal. The guy never stepped out of bounds. They couldn't actually review it. Seton Hall got the ball back and hit a game-winning buzzer beater with like 3.9 seconds left, and St. John's should not have lost that game. So if they hadn't blown a lead to Villanova and if they hadn't lost – some dumb game to Seton Hall because of a bad call, they would be sitting here at like 6-0. And like, I'm not saying that you can erase those losses, but what I am saying is that you have to take that into account when you consider how good the St. John's team is. They'll be playing in Madison Square Garden. And if they can get, as weird as this sounds, if they can get past DePaul, the 10 seed in the first round of the Big East tournament, then I think that they actually have a bracket that breaks down pretty well for them. And at plus 900, like, again, this is like Iowa State. We're saying this knowing full well that this is a team that Shamori Ponds might not show up one day, and they could end up losing by 25 in the first round of DePaul. But they also could end up going and winning this, and I would not be shocked at all.
I'm trying to decide. I'm looking at the bracket right now. Like, I want St. John's to get to the semifinals because Madison Square Garden on Friday night with St. John's versus either Seton Hall or Mullen versus Ewing would be awesome.
Yes, that would be a lot to fun. It would be old school Big East, man.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it would really, like, it would bring everybody back to the Big East. Everyone that complains about it. What I'm really upset is we were so close to getting an East versus West bracket too. Like, yeah. heading into the second half of Saturday, we had one there. I forget what it was. There was one switch that had to happen to get like the top half be the East and the bottom half be the West, which I want to see one year.
So let me ask you this. You mentioned DePaul earlier.
Yeah.
Plus 5,000. That means it's 50-1 odds. That means if you bet $10, you're going to win 500 if they win it all. Why do you think they can do it?
Because this whole Big East should be 50-1. I mean, literally picking a name out of here is crazy. But DePaul, like, they can do it because they're actually not bad this year. And I know it's crazy to say because when you think of DePaul, you think of, let's be honest, kind of terrible basketball. And man, like, they have decent wins. Like, they went 7-11 in conference play. They can score. You know, you don't trust their defense, obviously, but, like, they have a guy in, what, Max Strus that can go get buckets. Eli Kane's a good player. Olujobi inside, like, he can bother shots. Like, or Paul, they're fine. Like, I think the path works for them, too. Like you said, they swept Seton Hall. They played Marquette they played Marquette tough once on the road, lost by 19 at home. Like, this tour, like, there's just not a huge difference between 1 and 10 this year.
I think that is the biggest thing right there, is that DePaul, they actually have talent this year. You know, I know they finished 10th in the league, but there was a 3-way tie for last place. They won 7 conference games. This sounds just mediocre. They won 7 conference games for the first time since 2007. They have a dude that might play in the NBA, Max Strus. There's actually talent on this roster. I think that
they can kind of shoot the ball.
They shoot it. They can get hot. So, it's 50-1, so you have to realize that we're saying this like with ridiculous odds. But that's not worth, you know, putting a shekel or two on just in case. The most interesting thing to me about the conference, though, was – that I think legitimately 50% of the league is on the bubble. Seton Hall is not technically on the bubble. I think that they are probably safe.
I think they should be in.
Yeah, they should be in. But they're kind of like a Syracuse to me, where if they lose to Georgetown in the first round, and then a whole bunch of crazy shit happens, that they are the team that could end up being on the wrong side. But, I mean, even with a loss to Georgetown, I'd say that there's a 95% chance that they're in. The other four are more interesting. Creighton and Xavier playing the first round, and that to me is probably
an elimination.
Yeah, it's a play-out game. Creighton is as of right now, I think that they would be one of those like last four teams in. Xavier probably needs to get to the finals to have a real chance to get in.
Xavier needs to beat Creighton and Villanova to get to the finals. They can't have an upset.
Yeah, I think that's what needs to happen for them. And even then, I don't know if that is necessarily
enough.
So it'll be close. St. John's is probably on the right side of the bubble right now. But because of all the bad losses that they have, if they lose to DePaul and end up getting swept in 3 games by DePaul, 20-12 record, 8-10 record in the Big Ten, and they have like a 220th ranked non-conference schedule, they didn't really challenge themselves. That is the kind of thing that could end up seeing you go from being like a 9 seed 2 weeks ago to being a team that goes to the NIT. And Georgetown's like Xavier. They need to beat Seton Hall. They need to beat Marquette and get to the finals. But if they do that, then I think they have a chance.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to the Big East just because of that. The fact that not necessarily play-in games or elimination games. I guess you can call them elimination games with the 4-5 and the 3-6 game. St. John's could face an elimination tomorrow on Wednesday night. it's going to be interesting. And I mean, let's be honest, it's the Big East tournament at the Garden with Raftery and Gus Johnson on the call. Like, you still get excited for that, no matter how what the league is like year in or year out.
Yep, I agree with that. The one thing I do want to note, and I haven't really seen this anywhere else, Georgetown and St. John's, their resume is like more or less the same, right?
Georgetown's resume is not like horrendous.
Yeah, they both teams have 5 Q1 wins. Both Georgetown is 11-10 against Quadrant One, Quadrant One and Quadrant Two, while St. John's is 10-9 against Quadrant One and Quadrant Two. They both have 2 really bad losses, and they both have a really bad non-conference schedule. It's not all that different. And we're talking about St. John's as being a team that is probably in the tournament and Georgetown as being a team that's probably out. Not all that different. Yeah,
Georgetown just needed, man, if they could have just avoided one of those losses to Loyola or SMU.
How many teams are we saying that about, though?
Right. Or, I mean, they lost by 1 to Syracuse. Like, if they would have ended up winning that game, like, add that Syracuse win in, they're probably in with that win.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the Big Ten. It's being played in Chicago. Michigan State won a share of the regular season title. They are the 1 seed. Purdue was the team that they shared it with. They are the 2 seed. Michigan is the 3 seed. Wisconsin is the 4 seed. Riggs, talk to me about the Big Ten.
This is another one I have no idea what to expect, like in terms of value or like who I would want to put my money on, because Michigan State should be getting Nick Ward back, it sounds like. But now it's always weird. Like, you hear someone coming back, and it is a positive, don't get me wrong, but Michigan State's been used to playing without Nick Ward, and they've had success without Nick Ward. Now you throw him back in, and everyone's got to kind of like adjust roles again on the fly in a win or go home, you know, event. So I don't know if I like Michigan State to win this.
Why I'm a little hesitant in picking them?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because of the 9 seed on their side of the bracket.
Okay, I was going to say the 5 seed.
I like Maryland. Interesting.
I think they match up well against Wisconsin, because I think they can throw for the NBA talent on Ethan Happ and bother him enough. And then, you know, like you said, like, Indiana can beat Michigan State. My pick would be Maryland.
I like Indiana at plus 2,500. I was hoping that it would end up opening a little bit higher than that.
What odds are you having for Maryland?
Maryland is plus 1,400.
Okay. I like that. Yeah.
Which isn't bad. I like Indiana at plus 2,500, and here's why. I'm not sold that Ohio State is going to be able to turn this thing around, even with Caleb Wesson back. I just think that there is a lack of talent on that roster that you need to be able to win in March. I think that Indiana is rolling. They've won 4 in a row, right? They blew out Illinois on the road, and then I forget who they beat on Saturday.
Rutgers.
Oh, yeah, they beat Rutgers on Saturday. So 4 straight wins, but the start of that winning streak was at home. They beat Michigan State, who they swept this season. And then the game after that, they beat Wisconsin. So those are the 2 teams, assuming that seeds hold, that they would end up playing before they get to the finals. And I think it's also mostly like they're just kind of rolling right now. Like, Rob Phinisee finally looks like the guy that we saw early on in the season. Right?
Langford finally looks comfortable.
Yeah, Langford finally looks like he's got it going a little bit. Juwan Morgan's playing well. It's just, this is a team that looks like they're starting to, like, just figure it out a little bit. And I don't know if it's, I honestly don't really know what it is, but it seems like a couple of wins kind of changed the entire mood around that program. And, I mean, I know you get this, Riggs. There's a point where you just kind of have to like look at it and say, momentum. I don't know. I don't even know if it's momentum matters, but like confidence matters. And it looks this team finally has confidence again.
I mean, Juwan Morgan had a dominant senior night. Like, you have him with confidence. You have Romeo Langford comfortable. You have Phinisee looking the part. Then you throw in Archie Miller. Like, he's had success in these settings, which I think is always key. Like, I don't try to overthink it too much, but coaches that have had success in conference tournaments or the NCAA tournament, like, I hold a little bit of value in that.
Yep, I agree. It's not a mistake that you're able to game plan a way to win a game. And I think that Archie Miller might be able to figure it out. Although I do think that there is something to the idea that, like, Tom Izzo eventually, like, is going to have to find a way to beat this Indiana team. He'll eventually figure something out. You know,
What do you think of the bottom half of the bracket? Because I think it's good. The bottom half of the bracket is a lot weaker than the top half.
Yeah, especially because of what Iowa has kind of turned into.
And, like, even Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan. But
don't get me wrong. I think Michigan is good. And, like, I'm not saying they're a bad team, but, like, just haven't looked the part of Michigan lately.
Yeah, and part of it is because teams have kind of figured them out, right? Like, you know that there are three guys that aren't going to be a threat to you offensively. Yep. And now that they have Isaiah Livers out there because Charles Matthews is hurt, you know, it's not – he is – we talked about this last week. Like, there's a situation where he is a better fit in terms of what you want out of a player that plays that role. But I'm not sure that he is good enough at that role where – the fit supersedes the fact that Charles Matthews is just a better basketball player. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And then, I mean, Purdue, like, is anybody going to be consistent with Carson Edwards?
I don't know, man.
Like, Penn State's probably playing the best out of anybody on the bottom half of the
bracket. Oh, they are. Like, Penn State is another team at plus 4,500.
Yeah.
Where I was hoping that it would be a little bit higher, but that team is rolling. What are they on? Like, six of the last eight? Something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, that's a very interesting one to me.
I would almost can you imagine like an Indiana Penn State Big Ten championship game?
I can, and I think that it would be a lot of fun for me if I had. That would be a lot of fun for me if I had futures on Indiana and Penn State.
Oh God, that would be a great thing if you had a future on, but I don't think networks would love that one on Sunday.
Yeah, no, they would love Indiana there.
Yeah, Indiana, that's true. But Indiana Purdue would sell a whole lot more than Indiana Penn State.
That's true. Well, you know who would absolutely despise that? Every single team on the bubble.
Oh God, yeah. Because everything we said earlier just goes out the window with Indiana now to the Big Ten championship game with a chance of a bid steal with Penn State too.
Yeah. All right, so let me ask you this, because I think we kind of glossed over the top teams in this conference. Who do you think out of Michigan State and Wisconsin, Purdue and Michigan is who would you call the favorite? I know what the books are saying. The books are saying that Michigan State is the favorite. Michigan State is plus 150. Michigan is plus 250. Purdue is plus 325. And Wisconsin is plus 500. Out of those four, who do you think is the favorite to win? I'm not talking about who you would want to bet on. I'm talking about who is the most likely to win this event.
I guess Michigan State.
It's because the conference as a whole is just so weird, man. Like, we went for a while where we thought that there were two, maybe three teams that were like legitimate national title contenders. And now I'm sitting here looking at this league and I'm like, I don't know if any of these teams, like just how good any of these teams are. Like, just how good is Michigan State? I know that they've won some games. They swept Michigan without Nick Ward and without Josh Lankford. But how long can they just rely on Cassius Winston running himself into the ground for 40 minutes a game before eventually, like, I think part of the reason that Michigan State lost at Indiana is Cassius just got tired. Like, at some point, that little dude's legs are going to wear out on him and give out on him, especially when we're talking about playing three games in 3 days. That is a lot to put on him.
I don't trust Wisconsin because their best player can't play in close games.
Yes. Like, someone's going to be smart enough to start fouling Ethan Happ every single time he touches the ball with 8 minutes left in the game in a close game.
Yeah. I mean, the moment you're in the 1-on-1, you foul Ethan Happ.
Every time he touches it. That's what I would do.
And then Purdue, I mean, they're so inconsistent. They don't have a for sure second guy.
Like, yeah. And my concern there is, I think that Xavier Simpson. Almost the same thing
with Carson Edwards and Cassius Winston, too. Like, we've seen him get tired.
Yeah, but I think the argument that I would make there is it's easier to take Carson Edwards away because of he's a high volume shooter. It's easier to disrupt a high volume shooter than it is to disrupt a guy that is so good at playmaking.
Pick and roll,
Right. Because Cassius Winston is gonna when you guard pick and rolls, like, the part of the reason it's become so popular and such a big part of basketball today is that they're not easy to guard when you have somebody that is very, very good at it because you have so many moving parts defensively. And when you have someone that can read that, it really takes it away. Carson Edwards is not a guy that reads pick and rolls. Carson Edwards is a scorer, 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 first and foremost. So I think that he'll be easier to take away. Like he's the kind of guy that Xavier Simpson can just eat alive.
Yeah. Well, and then Michigan, are they ever going to be consistent scoring the ball?
Who knows, man?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what's so weird about this conference, man. Like, I know I catch a lot of flack from people because I talked about, like, how I'm not just like, I know Ken Pom has the Big Ten is what, the number one conference in America still.
Well, I think Big 12 is actually number one, but the reason they're so high up there,
it's because the bottom and middle have gotten better.
Yeah, and it's because everybody is so close. And
but that's the thing, everyone's just average to me in this league.
And I mean, the big thing is, and I think this is the best way to put it, is that this is probably the best conference in America, but that doesn't mean that they have some of the best teams in America.
Yeah.
I think the way that I look at it is that
it's the most balanced conference.
Balance. Yes. And the Michigan State, Purdue, Michigan, and Wisconsin are all like top 15 to 20 teams nationally, because that's just the state of what college basketball is right now. But they are, you look at them and they're like, one, they're not really set apart from the field. Two, they're not set apart from each other. And three, when you look at them compared to like Duke, Virginia, North Carolina, right, as the top three in the ACC,
Florida State,
it's just a drastic difference. All right, Florida
State might end up being the best team in the Big Ten right now.
I don't know if I would go that far. That sir is a take.
I mean, I would probably pick Florida State to win the Big Ten tournament.
I would say if Justin Robinson was back on Virginia Tech, that I would pick
Virginia
that.
Tech. Yeah, sure.
Yes, but I don't know. I wouldn't go that far on Florida State. All right, let's talk about the SEC before we get into the last two conferences, because I think we kind of got to dive into this one a little bit.
Yeah.
So what do you like there, Reeks?
I'm going to go a little different here. I like Auburn.
Auburn, the 5 seed.
The 5 seed.
See, I don't like that because they're only plus 500.
See that? What is it all bunched up for the 5 for you?
No, it's like,
odds-wise.
Tennessee is plus 150, Kentucky's plus 180, Auburn and LSU were plus 500, and then Mississippi State is plus 1,400.
Okay.
I do think, however, that the bracket really does shake out well for them, because they draw South Carolina in the semifinals, assuming they can get past Georgia or Missouri.
And then they get an LSU team or Florida and Arkansas.
And that probably is why the odds are only at plus 500.
Makes sense. And
Vegas ain't
the winning Tennessee probably didn't help the odds if you're betting for them.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
But like again, like the bottom half of the bracket, you have Kentucky, Tennessee, similar to what we said about Duke, Carolina. I don't want to take one of those teams where they have to play each other most likely.
Yeah, and here's the other thing about it. Like, I actually think, you know how John Calipari is always sitting here bitching and moaning about how the SEC doesn't get the credit that they deserve for like winning the SEC title? Like, why do we play these SEC tournaments if winning this game doesn't matter? Blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? It's going to matter this year, because you are playing.
It's the first year it matters.
It matters because the SEC title game is going to get played on Saturday.
Yeah, and that's why I was about to say that's why it matters, because he did have a gripe, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Kentucky grad, but the year that they beat A&M and ended up as a 4 seed and A&M ended up as a 3 seed, that did seem like it was already just like kind of written in stone beforehand. So it was like, well, what was the effect of that game there? Because it felt like everyone going into that was talking about it kind of being a tiebreaker for a 3-4 seed. Well, it ended up not happening. So now, the de facto title game moves to Saturday, assuming both teams win. And I'll tell you what, their quarterfinal matchups are interesting, because Ole Miss can beat Kentucky, Alabama has beaten Kentucky, and I think Mississippi State can challenge Tennessee.
I don't know about Mississippi State. I've never bought into this Mississippi State team fully beyond like just being fine, being a tournament team. And okay. I really do believe, I know you don't want to buy into this, Reeves, but I really do believe that this Tennessee team is different now than they were a couple months ago. And I know that they took the loss at Auburn.
I think they're just the same Tennessee team that they've been all year.
I think they're going to show up to play in this tournament. I think that
they're going to
see them play defensively. And I also, I think that Auburn is good enough that we should not just sit there and say, okay, a loss at Auburn is something that kills this Tennessee team.
Oh, and I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, I think it definitely just hurt them in the race for the number one seed, just because you take a loss at the end of the season, it's not going to help you when other teams are winning, obviously.
How funny is it that LSU won the outright SEC regular season title and they're going to have to vacate this year. And Will Wade is probably going to end up not having his job anymore. And Javonte Smart may never play for the Tigers again. I think it's hilarious the way that this played out.
It's beautiful because of our stance on amateurism. Like it's the perfect scenario. I want LSU to win the national championship. I want.
There's no chance that happens. Not when they lost their best point guard.
I want LSU to win the national championship.
You didn't even notice what I just said.
You said that he was better than Tremont Waters.
I did say that. I went there.
I heard. I just ignored you. Yeah. But it is. It's absolutely hilarious. The fact that, and I know LSU fans even before this aren't fond of what Joe Oliva, is that how you pronounce his last name, the AD?
Yep.
And the fact that they're booing the AD, they win the SEC outright, they cut down the nets, everyone's just assuming this is going to get vacated. And it's like, oh no, like this is actually a decent team too. Like they have talent. So everything kind of coming together is just, it's the most hilarious situation in college basketball I can remember.
Yes, it's very surreal watching all of this play out. I hope that LSU just brings Will Wade back, because why not, man? Like when's the next time you're going to be able to find lightning in the bottle?
I wrote a whole thing about that right before he got suspended, about how they shouldn't sit him, because it's like, well, what's the point? Like it's not December 6th. If it's December 6th, I get it. You're already in March. Like the season's going to get vacated. It's one thing if you lose like 10 games vacated because, oh, we had an ineligible player for 10 games or whatever. Or it's early in the season where you can kind of make a stance like, oh, we found out right away and did it. It's March. Just play everybody. Have everyone coach. Who cares?
It's not like people are going to forget it, and it's not like the punishment is going to be any less.
I remember watching Peyton Siva.
I remember that too. Anything else to add on the SEC?
I mean, it's going to be interesting. Do you think we get Kentucky Tennessee?
Yeah, I do.
And do you think the winner of Kentucky Tennessee wins the SEC?
Yes, I do.
And who is it? You think Tennessee?
I think it's a toss up. I honestly I think it depends on if Reed Travis plays and just how healthy Reed Travis is going to be. Like we talked about this, people don't need to hear it again. He's just kind of like the matchup buster for Grant Williams.
Yep.
But I just think that those two teams are head and shoulders above everyone else. And if there is going to be a team that ends up playing spoiler, I do think it's Auburn. And I do think that Bruce Pearl is the kind of guy that can find a way to make things work. For people that are interested in the bubble stuff, I think it's only Florida and Alabama, right? Like, I don't think that Arkansas is really close enough to.
No, and I think Ole Miss and Mississippi State are both safe.
Yeah, they're both safe. So it's Florida and Alabama. Florida, actually.
And South Carolina's too far. That's the weirdest thing about this whole thing. South Carolina's a 4 seed.
Yeah, you know, Frank Martin decided he didn't want to start playing until the end of the year. But I'll tell you what, you know who that really helped? Wofford, because Wofford has a 20-point win at South Carolina, and now it looks a lot better than it did at the time that it happened. All right, so let's move on. We can go really quick through the Pac-12 just because, like, I care so little about that conference this year. I've never watched less Pac-12 basketball than I have this season.
I shouldn't say that. I've only watched Pac-12 basketball because of Bill Walton.
I've only watched it because I bet on games.
Well, that too, but Bill Walton, like, it's, I get content out of Bill Walton.
All right, so let me ask you this. Why would anybody not bet on the league champion and the favorite to win the Pac-12 tournament at plus 300, which is Washington?
Because they haven't looked good lately either. Like,
they haven't looked good after they already sewn up the regular season title.
That's why I think that they should just kind of blow through this fairly easily. I do think Arizona State could be interesting because they do have an NBA player in Dort. But
and Zion Cheatham, but I'm not. I want no part of betting on a team that is coached by Bobby Hurley right now.
Right. But I don't know, man. Like, it's like Washington's just win every game by 10.
We'll see if it happens. The two that I think are interesting. One is Colorado, just because I buy into the idea of McKinley Wright and Tyler Bay. I don't love the fact that it's 3-1 odds. But I do think that the way that their bracket kind of breaks down, where they end up getting, if they beat Cal, who stinks, then they get Oregon State in the quarterfinals, and then Washington in the semis.
On your third, on your third game and third day, though.
Which is, yeah, not ideal. Right. But I do think that at plus 650, it's at the very least interesting.
Do you think Oregon's your other one?
Oregon is definitely the other one. The only problem is that they're plus 400, which is the same odds that you can get Arizona State for, and they got to play one extra day.
Yeah, give me Arizona State with the one less game and getting UCLA or Stanford.
I guess. I just don't want – I honestly don't want anything any part of betting on anything in this event.
No, I don't. Like, I just – I can't remember a major tournament I've been less interested in.
Yeah. I think that's probably right. The only team on the bubble in that league is Arizona State, and I think that they'll be fine as long as they can get to the semifinals. So let's move on. Let's move to the American, which is actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I do think that we have three teams that are locks in Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati, and a fourth that will be a lock if they can get to the semifinals in Temple.
It's interesting you say UCF is a lock.
I think they're in the same boat as like Seton Hall and Syracuse, where a lot has to go wrong for them not to get in.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We just went ahead and, you know, I know they beat Cincinnati and Houston, but that all of a sudden just kind of made them a lock, where I think they're still kind of like a 10 seed.
Yeah, I mean, they're a 10 seed. They're in the same boat as Seton Hall.
I guess that's true.
It's like Seton Hall and Syracuse, like I said.
I just think Seton Hall like has those like has that Kentucky win and the Maryland win.
Well, here's the thing. UCF right now, there are not five wins better than UCF's win at Houston. And there just aren't. Like, if we're talking about the net, there just aren't. You know, they won on the road at the number four team in the net. Gonzaga has not lost at home. Virginia lost at home once to Duke. Duke lost at home like, what is it, three or four times?
Right.
So they lost at home to Syracuse. And they lost at home to North Carolina, but those losses came when Zion Williamson wasn't there. So those two are going to be better. And I think you can make the argument that like maybe beating Gonzaga on a neutral floor is a better win. But whatever the case may be, UCF's win at Houston is going to look like a top five win in all of college basketball this season on Selection Sunday, regardless of what you think about Houston.
I know it's just a crazy statement when you hear it out loud.
When you combine that with the fact that they are 23-7, they went 13-5 in the American. They have good computer numbers. I think they're top 30 in the net right now. You could put all of that together with a win that they just landed over Cincinnati as well. That's a tournament team to me.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm looking to see where they are on like bracket matrix right now. I don't see them. Why are they not listed here? No way they're above an 8 seed. I'm just trying to think like where they would be, where I would think like they are an 8 seed. I think that's a little high, but I think it'll be Temple needs to win. That's for sure. I'll say that Temple needs to win more than
Temple
else.
Needs to win. But in like arguing about UCF isn't the point. What I'm interested in is what do you think about Memphis at plus 900 and Wichita State at plus 1700.
I like Memphis because they're at home. Penny Hardaway has embraced the college basketball heel factor. And there is nothing, you know, there's nothing he wants more than to win this thing.
Yes. I think that might be my favorite bet out of all of the conference tournaments.
They already beat UCF in this building or at home. They've beaten Houston. So that's your path right there to the finals. And oh no, they didn't beat Houston. They lost Houston. And then you get either like a Cincinnati or Temple in the championship game.
Yeah, it all comes down to basically whether or not you think that Memphis can beat Houston at home. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think they beat UCF at home. Like I think Memphis is going to beat UCF in the quarterfinals.
I want to bet on a team playing on their home floor, especially when they are as good as Memphis is on their own home floor.
Yeah, and like we said earlier, like you have a guy in Jeremiah Martin that is good enough that you can just hand him the ball and say, go win me this game.
Yep. The only for people that don't know, like he's popped off for like 40 multiple times this year.
Yeah, he had 40 and a half.
He had 41 and a half earlier this season. The only other team that's interests me in terms of futures is Wichita State at plus 1,700, but I'm probably going to end up staying away. The only reason I would do that is because Wichita State's been hot and they don't get Houston until the finals.
Yeah, but you got a Temple team that needs a win. And then a Cincinnati team, which What do you think of Cincinnati? Like, you know, they kind of got they played Houston tough for that first half, and then they just got their ass kicked by Houston the second half. Cronin calls them out. I'm curious to see how Cincinnati shows up for this event.
I just don't think that Cincinnati was all that good this season.
Right, but it's the fact that now, I mean, they are the second best team in this conference.
I don't think that they can beat Houston.
I agree with that.
So I would not want to bet on them there.
I'm just saying in general, like, what's your, do you think Cincinnati is the pick coming out of that lower half? Like, should you just pencil Cincinnati in the finals? So
I would not do that.
You wouldn't do that. Okay.
No. I think that they're probably the favorite to get out of the bottom half, but I just think they're fine. Like, I don't think there's nothing about that team that really scares me, if that makes sense. So, and like Temple, like you said, and here's the thing. I actually think you can make the argument that Temple might be more talented than Cincinnati is, as hot takey as that may be. Temple's guards are really, really good, dude.
Yeah, it's close.
Between Shiz Alston and Quentin Rose and Nate Pierre-Louis, like those guys are, I don't want to overstate it, but like, let's just say that they're really, really good. And I think that you might be able to make an argument that there is more talent on the Temple roster than there is on Cincinnati. And I say that knowing full well how good Cincinnati can be.
Yeah, it's close. It'll be interesting. Like I said, it'll obviously be boring if Houston just wins this thing, because they should. But this is the unique thing where it's played at Memphis, and Memphis is finally somewhat relevant again.
Yeah, I'm 100% here for the Memphis run. Can we just bet on that so we can root for it to happen?
Absolutely, because I love that Penny has just embraced being the heel.
There's nothing better than Penny being the bad guy. It's so good.
With him just getting into it with Rick Barnes, the Cincinnati game here at Cincinnati, the Memphis player just like stomping on Jaron Cumberland's hand, or I forget if it was maybe Trey Scott, whoever's hand he just stomped on. They're willing, like, they're embracing the bad boy life. Like, they're willing to legit just fight you if they need be.
Yes, and I love that about that. I think that's what Memphis needs to be.
Yeah, and then let Penny and Mike Miller like stunt in their private jet to go get recruits.
Yeah, go bring in the talent, and then we're gonna bring in all those tough Memphis kids that are gonna.
It'll be like old school Temple.
Kind of will. I'm 100% here for it.
And then like Penny can try to fight somebody like John Chaney threatened to fight John Calipari.
Oh man, that would be.
We're betting on Memphis. Like, I'm all in now. I'm betting on Memphis.
Yeah, we got it. I'm gonna go and put in the bet right now.
It's a legit chance because I liked their matchup against UCF, and then like that place will be loud for that Houston game.
They can. They're talented and they can score, and they're playing at home. And that's really all you need to know. And if it happens to be, who's the little point guard? Is it Alex Lomax? No, Tyler Harris. If Tyler Harris gets going, and Jeremiah Martin gets going, then that's the kind of team that can go out there and make a run at home in a conference tournament. So that's where my money's going to be invested in the AAC.
I'm all in.
All right, Reeves, man, listen, I've kept you for 75 minutes. I did not mean to keep you for 75 minutes. I do appreciate you coming through and letting the public in a little bit on the bets that you are going to be making this weekend. If you guys are still listening, you can find him on Twitter at Barstool Reeves. My man, I appreciate the time.
No problem. Let's have a good one.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.